a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. This is the Reconnect with Carmen LeBurge. I'm Birga Alden, filling in. Here on the show, we are putting God in His place, back where He belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. Whatever the headline, whatever the debate, from foreign affairs to affairs of the heart, from politics to parenting, God has something to say about all of it. Yet all too often, His people are standing on the sidelines of the discussion. But we hope to change that. We want to help you get God back into every conversation by challenging you to think about what you're thinking about, getting God's perspective on the news and issues of the day, in order that you can be an ambassador of that perspective to others. We invite you to connect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com, like us on Facebook, and let us know what you're thinking about on Twitter using the hashtag CarmenTalk. Carmen often talks about having a place at the table. Well, over the next few minutes, we're going to hear from a communications professional and professor whose focus on political and religious rhetoric, or who focuses rather on political and religious rhetoric. In a time of deep division, it seems like civil conversation is a lost art. But Dr. Joy Qualls shares from both a Christian worldview perspective and communications background how we can do the work of understanding and communicate across the divides.
All right. Well, so in this quest to be better communicators and people who more effectively communicate the gospel in all that we say and do, for us to be actual living demonstrations of the fullness of the beauty and truth of the gospel, we have with us a communications professor. We are joined by Dr. Joy Qualls. She is the chair of the Department of Communication Studies at Biola. She is also an associate professor of communication studies. Prior to Biola, she served at Evangel University in Springfield, Missouri. She holds master's and PhD degrees from Regent University, and she's been active in the National Communication Association and the Religious Communication Association. You can follow her on Twitter at Madam Speaker. Dr. Qualls, welcome to the Reconnect.
Hi, Carmen. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's a joy to have you with us. Now, when we think about communication, it is something that goes beyond just what I am speaking out there into the world. So when you use the term communication, when you are talking about what communication really means, can you give us a roundup of that?
Sure. When I think about communication, I go back to a little bit of an academic definition of communication, but it's the human use of symbols to induce a response in other human beings. So it's an ongoing, cyclical, continuous discussion between us as people. So it's not just a one direction. It's not just me throwing stuff out there and putting my perspective out for people and letting them take it as it will, but it's an ongoing, continuous process between me and everyone who's in my sphere. So it's those who are present with me. It's you and I speaking together today, but it's also all of your listeners and everybody who follows us on social media and who has a connection to our Facebook page and those sorts of things. Our reach is much greater than most of us realize. And so we have to think about our communication and be very intentional about our communication. But we're looking for a response, every single one of us. And that's often the portion that we forget.
When you use the term symbols, one of the things that just makes me instantly aware of is that we're not just talking about what people hear us say or overhear us saying, or even the things that we recognize that we are intentionally saying on social media or otherwise. But I mean, tattoos are symbols,
right,
that I'm putting
That's
out there
right.
in front of the world, or
right.
Or what I choose to wear, or jewelry, or
right.
a cross. So
That's
can
correct.
You talk about a little bit of our nonverbal communication, particularly when we talk about generations?
Sure. Yeah, I think that over time, the symbols that we use either increase in meaning or they change in meaning. So one of the things that I talk about in the classroom is that words don't mean, symbols don't mean, people mean, and how people use those symbols is where the meaning is derived from. And so we have to look to people and not just the symbols in terms of where meaning is ascribed. It's easy for me to see somebody, for instance, who is wearing a cross necklace and automatically assume that I have a camaraderie with them as a fellow believer in Jesus Christ. But without having a conversation or an interaction with that person, I could be making even a false positive assumption about them that that doesn't possess that same level of meaning and can create miscommunication or misunderstanding. It also can create opportunity for healthy and beneficial conversation. So those symbols are worth having connection and conversation about, but we need to not make assumptions about them, which is particularly important when we're talking about young people. So and different generations and intergenerational communication. A symbol that was benign for one generation may be really powerful for another. And when we don't talk to each other about where the meaning of those symbols was derived from is where we run into most of our problems.
Well, and instantly when you say that, I think that some of the things that just pop into my mind out of the headlines would be, you know, our relationship to the flag. And a lot of
right.
that depends on which flag we're even talking about. So
That's
in some
exactly
places
right.
in the southeastern United States, you know, there is meaning associated with a particular flag that means very different things, you know, to different people. So I do think that these kinds of conversations about all of the things that are a part of communication and all of the things that we are communicating, even if we don't, even if we aren't intentional about it and we don't think about the fact that those symbols have a different meaning depending on where we are or the group of people that we are seeking to communicate with or who we are communicating with and maybe don't think about the fact that we are. So
well,
that is... go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I would say... one of the things that I think is a challenge is that our communication is always intentional. We just may not intend the response that we get. And when we don't take some time in our intentionality to think through the symbols that we are putting out there, then we are shocked, stunned, and deeply saddened when the response that we get isn't what we... not even so much not what we thought we would put in it, but what we didn't put thought into what it might be, which is usually where the problem lies.
So let's talk about that, because you have this phrase that I have seen you use, which is the work of understanding.
Yes.
Right? The work of understanding. I don't think that a lot of us have spent a lot of time thinking about the fact that we should be working to understand other people.
Right.
So talk with us about that.
Right. Yeah, it's one of those things where, for me, so one of my other mantras that I put out there, if you'll allow me to use that language, for students is that how we talk about things matters. So how we talk about things matters, and we have to work to understand one another, because we make far too many assumptions about other people. And I can say that being a recent transplant to Southern California, right? There's a lot of assumptions that we make about what it means to live in California, who the people are who live in California, and what they mean. And we have to take time and not just read headlines or watch television shows or things of that nature to think we understand who people are. But instead, we have to make intentional efforts to engage people, one another, to get to know them and enter into relationship with them in order that we can understand where they come from. And I think to some extent, I'm not a naysayer who says that that's been lost, but I think that we don't use the tools that we have at our disposal effectively to work at that understanding. So I'm not actually one who believes that social media is a bad thing that's created greater distance between us. I think it can actually create greater connection between us. But we have to understand how social media works in order to create that connection. We have to be willing to engage one another. So let me just give you an example. I went to a conference in the Middle East several years ago and met a graduate student from a university in a Middle Eastern country, and he started to follow me on Twitter. He quickly picked up that I am a believer in Jesus, and so he started to engage me on social media openly in the public about my belief in Jesus. He's a practicing Muslim. He's a man. I'm a woman. So there's all kinds of different cultural, social, and religious dynamics at play there. And it would have been very easy for me to just argue back with him my position. But I had to take some time because I was really interested in wanting to know why he would engage me, what the meaning of that conversation could be. So I had to study belief, first of all. So what role does Jesus play in Islamic belief? What are the cultural dynamics between men and women in this particular country where this young man was from? And how do I engage him? And we don't talk very much, but every 6 months or so, I'll get a tweet from him and he'll ask me questions. And I really feel like it's an opportunity for me to understand him, but also that he can understand me. But it takes work and it takes effort, and sometimes it's exhausting. And I don't want to put that time and effort into there. I want to ignore him, or I want to quickly retweet some, easy 140 character Christianese, statement. But the truth of the matter is that I want this young man to know who I am as a believer in Jesus. And if I can do that, then that's what I've been called to do. And I'll let the Holy Spirit take over the rest of the work of that understanding.
So it occurs to me, let me remind our listeners, you're listening to The Reconnect. We are talking today with Dr. Joy Qualls, Communication Studies Department and Chair at Biola University. You can follow her on Twitter, which she just referred to, at Madam Speaker. So Dr. Qualls, when you say that, one of the things that occurs to me is not only are you able to speak into the life of that one individual who is asking those questions from a very unique perspective, but to everyone who follows him.
That's right.
And I'm wondering if just the knowledge that he's following you on Twitter, and therefore sort of the recognition that there's also this circle of people that you are connected to through him, whose names you don't know, who live in circumstances you and I could never even imagine. But because they follow him, technically they're in your sphere of influence. I'm wondering if that even affects what you retweet and how you respond when you don't even necessarily know that he is expressly paying attention at the moment.
Right. It's a huge responsibility. And I won't lie and say that I always get it right. All of us have had those moments where, we didn't pay attention to the fake news story and we send it out, or we respond in haste to something that somebody, that we disagree with. And the more I have become aware of my own role in engaging in understanding, the more careful I am in terms of what I put out there. But when I say care, I don't mean craftiness. I don't mean that I'm working through those 140 characters to try to present everything in the most politically correct, most sounds like I've come out of a Christian bookstore, greeting card aisle, something like that. I don't want to be that stereotypical either. I want to be somebody who influences, but also somebody who people are willing to ask questions about. What did you mean by that? Or how do we do that? Or did you really mean this? So I've been called a couple of times on some things that I've put out there, and it always is an opportunity to make myself better in terms of how I engage others. It stings a little bit. None of us like to be called out on those things, but I've become a better communicator myself as a result of it.
which is really an interesting way of thinking about how there is the potential for even accountability on social media if we allow ourselves for it to be a place of genuine communication and not just a platform from which we shout one-liners, but that it really is a place where not only are we willing to be called out, even when it's uncomfortable, but where we really are allowing space for other people to engage in a real conversation about a subject. So talk about that notion of that idea of giving other people space to speak.
Yeah, so again, one of the things that we as communication scholars teach is that communication is not one-sided. It requires an audience to be present. And when you allow that audience to communicate back with you, you create an opportunity for connection and relationship, which is ultimately more important than winning the argument. And I think that
what?
Is... Yes,
what?
Yes, yes.
Say that again.
Yes. We've been created for relationship, and it's not about winning the argument. It's about establishing a relationship. And so for me, the greatest feedback I've gotten from people in terms of social media and the way that I conduct myself online are people who've come up to me in person. In fact, just a year ago, I had a gentleman at a conference who said, I've followed you for several years, and I came to this conference just because I wanted to meet you, because how you have engaged other people online has inspired me to become a better communicator, and I came here so that I could meet you. And I was like, no, really, no. Like, like if you knew all the mistakes that I've made, you know. But he said, no. Like, you're willing to acknowledge when you make a mistake. That's number one. Number two, you don't get hostile with people that you engage. And number three, you're willing to entertain ideas and admit when you might be wrong. And that was really touching to me. So here was this person who was sort of, you know, kind of acting like a fan might be the word or something like that. But really what he gave back to me was that accountability. It wasn't just the interactions online, but it was a reminder again to me that people are watching who may never engage you online. Mm-hmm. And they are also paying attention to just how you handle the situation. It's not even what you said. Like, he couldn't have pointed to one thing, right, that I said or did that he felt particularly connected to. But it was that he had been observing the conversation, and he saw those connections. And just 3 weeks ago, I spoke at this gentleman's church because we've developed a real-life relationship. And so that's the other thing. In-person relationships are also possible in online environments. And so being online, being in the public sphere, is just a tool of communication. It's not about bludgeoning people over the head with our perspectives. You know, because you can be a right fighter. And if you want to be a right fighter, then you will have moments where you will win. But it will be a very lonely existence.
Now, when you use that phrase, when you say a right fighter, is that I'm establishing my rights, or is that a I'm right and you're wrong, or is that there's a right side of things and a left side? When you say right fighter, what are you referring to?
Well, I think it can be all of the above and both and. But when I say the word right fighter, I mean thinking that your perspective and your position is the only one that can be out there. And so whatever that is, whether it's right in terms of direction on something, or it's right or wrong, or it's that it's the idea that nobody else has the ability to speak into the situation that you're speaking into. And so you're willing to bludgeon people with your words so that at the end of the day, you can walk away. By the way, you're not paying any attention to what other people are thinking, but that you can walk away thinking, huh, I won that situation, or I came out on top, or I showed them, or something to that effect. And so it can be all of the above, but it, at the end of the day, is that it does. I didn't connect with anybody. I didn't have. I'm out here on this island by myself, and I got it. Well, I, you know, great. That's fantastic. But again, that's not what we were created for, and that's not our call, the commission upon us as especially as believers to be the bringers of good news. If you're out on an island by yourself shouting out to an existence, it's going to be very difficult to accomplish those things.
Okay, friends, I hope that you are hearing what Dr. Qualls is saying, because I think that she is she's confirming lots of things that we have talked about here on the show. And I hope that when you hear her talking about not being a right fighter, not being a person who actually thinks that your perspective is the only one that's allowed to be out there. I think that we absolutely have to keep in mind that Jesus, who came full of grace and full of truth and absolutely had the right answer to every question and certainly could have shut people down in conversation at in any given moment, that is not how he chose to engage the world that he so loves.
That's right.
And not everybody responded to Jesus in the same way. So even the fullness of the truth of the gospel standing right in front of someone does not necessarily compel them to believe. And so we who are his representatives in this generation, we who have the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ and who have the opportunity to live it out in the fullness of its truth and beauty before other people, we need to keep in mind exactly what it is, who it is we're supposed to be showing. So if I walk away from a conversation and my internal response is, huh, I showed them, I sure do hope that what I showed them was authentically Jesus and
right,
not some way that I got the upper hand in a conversation through rhetoric.
What an important conversation. That was Dr. Joy Qualls talking with Carmen all about conversation, communication, the art in which we engage in that beautiful exchange with one another. We've had this dialogue going on within our house the last couple of days. I've got a 15-year-old who had some problems with a school friend that she needed to resolve, and she wanted to text the problem and try to have it resolved through that mode of communication. And we advised her, nope, this needs to be a face-to-face, or at the very least, it needs to be an on-the-phone conversation so she can hear your tone of voice. And initially, she did not heed our counsel, and she engaged in this debate with her friend through text messaging, and very quickly, it was misinterpreted, and sure enough, she had to get on the phone, because there is something very powerful, something very important about being able to hear the tone of voice, being able to hear what you're emphasizing, and I'm prayerful that they're going to work out their issues. There's still a few bumps in the road, but I think all of us have been there. You know, it's so much easier, we think, to shoot off a quick text message or to even, you know, engage through email, when sometimes what it really calls for is that face-to-face, look each other in the eyeball, and really be genuine and honest and open with each other. But definitely a lot more difficult and takes a lot more emotional strength, I suppose, to do it that way. Well, friends, it is a brand new year, and we are excited to be sharing it with you. You can visit reconnectwithcarmen.com and check out the resources that we have posted for you. You can sign up for the podcast, you can donate to the ministry, and you can share today's show with somebody new. So this is The Reconnect. I'm Birga Alden. I'm filling in for Carmen LaBurge. If you're missing Carmen, she's going to be right back here next week. Of course, you can look forward to that. She's been out on assignment with her writing project, excited to hear about all of the great stuff that she's been able to accomplish in the days that she's been away. If you happen to miss last week's show, I want to let you know that Carmen spoke with author and speaker Trillia Newbell about her new book, which was written to help us slow down in our busy lives and find the freedom to enjoy God and His good gifts. That sounds like a book I need to pick up. Also, Carmen hosted two dynamic conversations last Wednesday and Thursday about the key trends and cultural conversations that we need to be prepared for in 2017. Then in Thursday's program, she was joined by Jim Dennison, founder and CEO of the Dennison Forum on Truth and Culture, and Morgan Lee, a reporter at Christianity Today. They continued looking at 2017 trends to watch, this time focusing on top trends of evangelicals. This included changing evangelical perceptions on Israel, millennial evangelicals, and orthodoxy, and how Christian leaders plan to work with our incoming president, Donald Trump. Of course, you can always check all of this out online. Don't forget, you can pick up the podcast. That's all available for you right there with reconnectwithcarmen.com. And of course, on all the social media channels as well, we welcome you to catch up with us in any of those avenues. Friends, I'm Birga Alden, and this is the Reconnect with Carmen LaBurge, where we're putting God in his place, back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So we're talking about what people are talking about, equipping you to be an ambassador of the kingdom of God in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. We invite you to connect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com, like us on Facebook, and let us know what you're thinking about on Twitter using the hashtag CarmenTalk. Carmen is out working on her book this week, and I'm filling in for her. And right now, we are joined by Jay Lauder. Jay has been called to full-time evangelism since 1989. He is the founder of Jay Lauder Harvest Ministries, an organization dedicated to reaching diverse groups of people with the message of Jesus Christ. He has participated in more than 350 citywide outreaches and conferences. You can find him online at jlauder.com and on Twitter at Jay Lauder. Now, Jay just produced a new ministry outreach to share the hope of the gospel through transformational life stories run on national television networks. The show is called The Darkest Hour, and it is currently airing on Discovery, Freedom, AMG, and others. Welcome, Jay. So glad to talk to you today.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you today.
Well, give us a little bit of additional insight about what The Darkest Hour is all about.
Well, it's all about trying to reach people that in their normal routine of life may not have access to the gospel. Maybe they do have access, but they just don't have a passion for it. There's no pulse there. So we're trying to reach people that normally don't go to church or have some type of a connection to Christ or the gospel.
So give a little bit of an example of what that might be like for those people that are familiar with standard Christian television and how this is really different.
Well, we really wanted to go on secular networks because we realized that many people, they wouldn't visit a Christian network. It's not something that they think about. It's not really on their radar. So that's the reason that we've selected the time slots that we have, that being Friday and Saturday night, that being late, and that being secular networks. We're hoping that people, just in the course of their everyday life, that normally wouldn't watch Christian programming, might flip onto our program and find a hope that maybe they've never experienced.
So is that what you would label as the purpose of the show, is just giving people hope and an opportunity to hear the gospel message that normally wouldn't flip over to a Christian channel?
Well, yes, I would, but I would streamline that a little bit more and say that really the bottom line of this television show is evangelism. The truth of it is, the first 24 minutes, you wouldn't even know that it has anything to do with God. There's no mention of God or Jesus or the gospel, and even that's by design. What we're trying to do is get people plugged into a story, someone who they would relate to, or someone that they know who is related to. And so that's why we have diverse groups of people with diverse backgrounds, where kind of like you would see, you'll notice like on weight loss commercials and things like this, oftentimes a testimony is the most powerful tool, where someone can see someone else who's been where they've been and has gotten to a different destination. And so we're hoping that people will find something, a common denominator, where they can see that someone else who's walked the same path that they've walked has found a way of escape.
Hmm. How did you get inspired to create this TV show?
Well, I was standing in Grand Central Station with my wife and three kids on family vacation, and you know, I wasn't thinking about evangelism. I mean, I was on vacation. But as I stood there and looked at all the people scurrying around in their process of just daily life, I turned to my wife and I said, you know, Missy, this is not Texas. This is not the South. These people, a lot of them, did not grow up like we did, where church or religion was a staple of life. And I said to her, you know, even if we had the resources to rent out a place like Madison Square Garden, they probably wouldn't come because it's not something that they're thinking about. There's a hunger and a thirst, but they don't realize that it's for God. And so there's literally millions of people just like them all over the world that there's got to be some way that we can get the gospel to them. For too long, the church has waited for unsaved, non-believing people to come to the church. The great thing about Jesus is he didn't wait for people to come to him. He went to them. And so I began to pray about what could be an avenue that we could tap into where we could get the gospel in front of people. Because at the end of the day, I mean, we use the word hope, but even that is camouflaged in a way. We're trying to introduce people to what it means to have a personal relationship to Christ and how you can know him on a one-on-one basis.
Yeah. So you've mentioned Texas. I assume that you grew up there. Did you come through a Christian background, and are you somebody who has one of those cut-clean stories where you can not really relate to the people that you're showing on TV, or did you have some dark places in your own story that maybe you've weaved into the fabric of this program?
Yeah, well, definitely. I think part of the passion that I have is because of a lot of mistakes and a lot of the quicksand that I got into in my own life. I did grow up, of course, in the South, and I did grow up in a church environment. I mean, we were there Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, but I became very inoculated. You know, it's kind of like the flu shot. I'd gotten just enough of the gospel and Jesus to prevent me from getting the real thing. And while I believed that I was a Christian, I was one of those people that Jesus speaks about in Matthew 7, where he says, you know, one day you're going to stand before me, and I'm going to tell you I never knew you. So there was a lot of, I was very hypocritical. The truth of it is I didn't even realize it. And then because of some of the addictions in my life and suicidal tendencies, there's always been a real passion for people who have been stuck in some of the same traps that I was stuck in until I was 21 years of age.
Mm. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Jay Lauder. He is a producer and evangelist, and you can find out more about the show at thedarkesthour.tv. But talk about who some of the people are that are featured in the show.
Well, we've tried to take a buffet approach, and so we have people literally from, I don't know, early 20s on up to 50s. We have Hispanic, we have white, we have male, we have female, Caucasian. I mean, we just have a smorgasbord, I guess you could say a spiritual gumbo of different people with different stories because, again, you know, we're trying to connect with people from different walks of life. For example, we have one lady who was sexually abused by a minister in her church and eventually ended up becoming a stripper. We have another young girl who, from California, was gang raped after a football game. We have another guy who lost a limb fighting overseas. We have a guy that overdosed on drugs. We have a guy that was in prison for murder. So, you know, we have people from blue collar, white collar, young, middle aged, older. It's just a real diverse group of people, again, with the goal in mind of, hey, you can connect with where they've been, and we want you to see somebody. We want you to visibly see and audibly hear from somebody who has been where you've been and realize that everything they were ever looking for was not in those other devices that they sought out, but it was in knowing Christ. Because that's what happened to me at 21 years of age. I mean, like anybody else, I sought many different vices, but it was always left me unfulfilled until I met Christ. And when I finally really met Christ, not religion, but when I really met Jesus, it so revolutionized who I was. Everything that mattered no longer mattered, and everything that didn't matter meant everything. And so that's what we're trying to do is reach those people. And we just know that there are people all over the United States that, unlike many of us in Texas or in the South, they literally just, they have no idea who Jesus really is, what his purpose is, and the forgiveness that he offers.
Hmm. Well, I've got kind of a twofold question then. First off, how do you find these people? And then how do you convince them to share their stories on national TV? That can't be an easy thing.
I love the question. We find many of them come through what we do, because we're an evangelistic organization. So the very nature of what we do, we encounter a lot of people. We meet a lot of people. So some of them have came through that route, and some of them have came through other connections of people who do what we do, other evangelists or pastors. And then as far as helping them understand the importance of sharing their testimony, I think for most people that are really in love with Jesus, who recognize how great his salvation is in their life, understand that the Great Commission is to go reach the unsaved. It's Mark 5:19. It's go home and tell your friends what great things I've done for you. It's Matthew 28:19-20. Go into all the world and make disciples of all nations. And, you know, Revelation tells us that we overcome the enemy by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of our testimony. And so it's almost foreign to me to think that anybody that has, and we all have a great story. It's just different stories from different walks of life. But not utilizing that story to help other people. You know, I believe that Christ saved us to use us to help save other people. It wasn't just so we could go sit at the banquet table. It was so we could go get other people and invite them in.
Mm. All right, so this is maybe a sensitive question, but I'm curious to know if you all have discussed this as a staff. What if somebody has a story where they were the predator in a situation, they met Jesus, fell in love with him, had their life transformed? Is that a story that you're willing to share on air? Because that's a tough one, and I think a lot of people might look at it and say, yeah, have they really changed?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be quite frank, I always have a challenge with anybody who is in a critique position of saying who's legitimate and who's not. I mean, at the end of the day, Jesus says that, use an illustration of a field of wheat and tares, and they all look the same, but he says he's the only one qualified to determine who's authentic, who's genuine, who's real, and who's camouflaged. Yeah. And so, you know, the truth of it is we would utilize anybody's story that truly met Christ and wanted to leverage their story to help other people. Some people look at the Great Commission as the great option, but it's not. It's the great command, and it's something that every single one of us should do. You know, after I met Jesus, nobody said, Jay, you need to leverage your testimony. You need to share the gospel with other people. I just automatically wanted to do it. I wanted to help other people find the same hope that I found. So, yeah, you know, we've got a guy in particular who spent time in prison. He was a member of a nationally known gang. I mean, he's been in prison several times. If you saw him in a back alley, trust me, you'd be afraid of him. He's got tattoos on his eyes, on his face, on his neck. He looks to be bad news. But I can honestly say, and he's on our show, that he loves Jesus as much as any preacher I've ever met. And I know more preachers than just about anybody because of what I do. So we love those stories. Because, again, there are people that would only really relate to somebody else who's been there.
Mm-hmm. If you're just now listening in, we are talking with Jay Louder. He is a producer and evangelist. You can follow Jay's ministry online at jaylouder.com, also on Twitter at Jay Louder. Talk a little bit about those graveyard slots and why you choose those particular portions of the air schedule to broadcast these programs.
Well, I know I can't make a theology out of my experience, but I do know this, that many people who are stuck in the quagmire of a life similar to what I used to live, they are doing what I did, which Friday and Saturday night was a big party night, and in my case and many others, that's a night where you go out and, you know, maybe you're involved in the drug scene or the alcohol scene, and typically that means, you know, if you're whatever you're doing, just out partying, you're getting in late. And, you know, of course, most people don't have to work on the weekend, so we wanted to be strategic and realize that it's a time frame where people typically are up later than normal, And plus, too, we realize that there's a lot of people that can't sleep at night. Maybe they've never been through some of the addictions that I've been through or some of the things that other people have, but they feel hopeless. They have no purpose, no definition, no meaning, no hope, and so they can't sleep. Maybe it's a problem with their marriage, or maybe it's a problem with their kids or grandkids, and so they can't sleep. And we just know, we just believe in the power of God enough, and we've seen this. Matter of fact, the other day, somebody got out of prison, was staying at their uncle's house, and was flipping channels. I mean, it was literally the day they got out of prison and flipping channels, and wouldn't you know, they stumbled onto our program. But you can't say that's an accident. I believe that was God ordained. And this person who had just gotten out of prison that day came to know Christ. So, yeah, it is strategic. It is by purpose, because the amount of people that are up that time of night typically, and not everybody that's up late at night is up for the wrong reasons, but many of them are.
Hmm. So where can we find The Darkest Hour? Where is it airing right now?
Well, the best thing to do really is go to thedarkesthour.tv, because we're on different networks and different time slots. I'll give you an example. Just yesterday, I found out that we were approved for the E! Network and the Bravo Network. So we're in negotiations right now for new time slots on those two networks. So, you know, one weekend we may be on one channel, the next weekend we may be on another. And so it's constantly changing, because what we wanted to do is we wanted to be diverse in the networks that we were on. So if people go to thedarkesthour.tv, they can get a schedule. And let me add, one thing that we've also wanted to accomplish with this television show is not only help people come to know Christ, but give a tool to people who already know Jesus. You see, many people who are Christians feel intimidated. They don't know what to say. They have a lost friend, family, coworker, neighbor, and they want to reach them, but they just don't know how to do so. Well, we've made it easy where you can go to thedarkesthour.tv, and you can share any of these stories in particular that you think might identify with that person in your social pipeline that you'd like to see God reach. So it's really the best place not only to get information about when it's going to air, but it's also the best place to go so that you can use it as a tool to reach people that you know that are without Christ.
Excellent. That's a great idea. So what kind of response, what feedback are you getting so far?
It's honestly, it's been astounding. You know, I gave you one example a while ago of somebody that had just gotten out of prison. A staff member told me the other day, they said, as far as I know, we've gotten contacts from every state in the U.S. but South Dakota. To say that he's actually counted states, I don't know, but he said it just seems like we've gotten connected literally from people from all walks of life, from all over the country, and even some overseas. So, you know, that's been great, and we've had people literally from every demographic. I mean, we've had business people, we've had teenagers, moms, dads, religious people, non-religious people, atheists. I mean, it's been crazy. We actually had, a few weeks ago, a madam of a house of prostitution contact us. So, I mean, honestly, it's just been miraculous to see what God has been doing through the network.
Mm. Well, we trust that God knows exactly what person needs to be reached with what message at any given time, which is why I think it's so beautiful that you all have been very strategic and purposeful about throwing it out there for those people that are channel surfing, you know, maybe after a night of partying, but maybe we've got somebody that stumbled into this program right now. We've got just another moment or two. Would you give a quick gospel synopsis for somebody that might have just happened to have turned on the radio right at this moment?
I just want to tell anybody that's listening right now, I know where you're at. I've been there. I know what it's like to be uncertain of my eternal destiny. I know what it's like to lay in bed at night with no peace. I know what it's like to lay in bed and wonder if God is even real. But I've got news for you. I know without a doubt that he is, because I personally met him. And the way I met him was, is I recognized, I'd heard the story about Jesus dying on the cross and that he rose from the grave. But even though I'd heard it, it was just information that I had in my head. I found out one day that the way to actually know Jesus was the fact that if I was willing to admit that I was a sinner, if I was willing to ask the Lord to forgive me of my sins, that if I was willing to ask him to give me the power to turn away from my sins and simply put my faith in him, it wasn't a matter of me joining a church or cleaning up my life or becoming better. It was a matter of me coming clean just as I was and saying, Lord Jesus, I do believe in you. I have faith in you. I believe you died for me. I believe you died because of me. I believe you rose from the grave. And Jesus, I want to receive you into my life. I prayed a prayer. It wasn't anything fancy. It wasn't anything that would have impressed anybody, but it was a genuine heart cry. You see, God promises in Romans 10:13 that anybody that calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. You might say, well, Jay, gosh, you don't know what I've done, what I've been involved in, the mistakes that I've made. I've got more baggage in my life. I've got more ghosts in my closet. It's unfathomable. But I want you to understand that your sin is not greater than the love of Christ. Your sin could never be greater than the power of the blood of Christ. And it means right now, wherever you're at, you're in your car, you're in your home, maybe you even go to church all the time. Maybe you're Baptist, Methodist, Catholic, Presbyterian, whatever, and you'd say, Jay, I don't know for sure that Jesus lives in me. I want to encourage you right there, right where you're at, just from the bottom of your heart, say, Lord Jesus, forgive me. Help me to turn away from my sin. I do believe in you. I receive you into my life. And based on his promise, not mine, but his promise, that if you will confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, that's Romans 10:9, you will be saved. It doesn't just mean saved and given a ticket to heaven. It means a new life. So right there where you're at right now, I encourage you to do that. And you can have the assurance of knowing not only that he loves you and knowing that you're going to heaven, but that he'll never leave you nor forsake you.
Amen. Thank you, Jay. Jay Lauder, our guest today. I want to encourage you to connect with him online at thedarkesthour.tv. Thanks so much.
Hey, what a pleasure being with you today. Thank you so much for having me.
My delight. God bless you. All right, friends, it is time to go below the fold. This is the point in the show where we go below the fold and lift up stories and make conversations that are designed to help you start or engage in others in conversation that may not initially appear to be about God, but where the introduction of eternal principles can change not only the conversation, but the course of another person's thinking and living. Now, on Sunday, Meryl Streep was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award during the Golden Globes. And according to CNN, quote, in a nearly six-minute address while accepting the Cecil B. DeMille Award, the actress denounced Trump's campaign rhetoric and criticized him for mocking a disabled reporter, end quote. But even if you weren't watching live, thanks to the internet, it quickly became the speech heard around the world. There was a swift response from the American public. Millions of social media comments either applauded her boldness to speak her mind or slammed her, quote, Hollywood rhetoric. But the vast majority of us will never have the opportunity to address a room full of finely dressed Hollywood elites, let alone the nation. A small percentage of us may have the opportunity for some sort of a speaking platform or a publication that could potentially reach others with our points of view. Yet, a lack of audience does not equate a lack of impact or importance. You know, it is so easy to equate self-worth with success or popularity, yet that is quite contrary to what Scripture tells us. For those who have a personal relationship with Jesus, you have been given an unearned promotion of the most astonishing sort. You have become royalty, son or daughter to the King of Kings. So what should we do with our appointed position of prominence? Well, the answer is simple and probably less glamorous than we want. It's love God and love others. You know, I was recently reminded of another Hollywood speech. This one was given by Susan Sarandon's character in a 2004 movie called Shall We Dance? In discussing marriage, she says, quote, we need a witness to our lives. There's a billion people on the planet. I mean, what does any one life really mean? But in marriage, you're promising to care about everything. The good things, the bad things, the terrible things, the mundane things. All of it, all the time. Every day. You're saying, your life will not go unnoticed because I will notice it. Your life will not go unwitnessed because I will be your witness. So let me ask you a question. Do you view your marriage as a mission field? Is your role as a spouse something that you view as equally important as those who are out in remote jungles somewhere sharing the gospel with unreached people groups? Maybe you're feeling stagnant and bored in your marriage, and you view just hanging on as an act of sacrifice. I'll tell you what, though. If both you and your spouse are believers in Christ, the opportunity to be a witness to the world of what healthy marital love looks like sets the stage to share the story of Christ and his bride. Don't underestimate the power of serving God through your marriage. For those of you that are parents, are you raising your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord? Maybe you're overworked and you're overtired and you feel that you can't even compete with the messages of the world, so you're just going to leave it to chance. Don't. One thing was made abundantly clear through the Golden Globes, and that's that the message of Hollywood is poised and polished. But all that glitters is not gold. You know, media tickles the ears of our children and influences them in a powerful way. Our job as parents is to not grow weary in doing and speaking good. You need to model Christ to your children. Use your platform as a parent to speak into the lives of your most treasured audience. And singles, for you, all the world's a stage, and you can go wherever the Lord calls you to serve Him and love those that He puts in your path. If your stage happens to be in an office in Cleveland or fast food restaurant in Sacramento, watch for the director to give you the cue, because your role is integral. So I'm going to encourage you, raise your voice, take your stage, and leverage your platform, knowing that you've been called to do a good work. Keep your eyes fixed on Christ and find fulfillment in Him. He is your audience of one, then His validation becomes all that matters. God bless you. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for listening to The Reconnect. Carmen will be back with you next week.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.